Good morning, everybody. It is February 8, 2022, and regardless of the date, my name is Larry Jacobs, and this is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and we thank you for listening, and you may be listening on the archives. We know a lot of people do that. That's the nature of podcasting. Every show we do is archived at our website, which is ace-ed.org, ACE-ED.org. We are the voice of equity and access, our official online journal and our American Consortium for Equity in Education. All right, everything we do is over at ace-ed.org. Our brand new issue of our journal, Equity and Access, we just put it up yesterday, as a matter of fact. Wonderful issue, all about building equity through SEL, social emotional learning. You'll see it. You can flip through it. It's online at ace-ed.org, and you can link to our other website, which is all about social emotional learning, and that's called seltoday.org. We hope you go over there as well. We do take a part of the magazine. We call it the SEL Today Digest and put it over at seltoday.org. Enjoy what we do. Please sign up for what we do. We love having you over there and listening to the podcast. All right, again, everything's at ace-ed.org. We have a very special show for you today. We have from the Rupali LeMay. I'm going to ask her if I pronounced that correctly. I think I did. Rupali LeMay. Okay, I hope.
Yes, director, no, that's correct.
Yeah, thank you, Rupali. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I wanted to get that right. I tried so hard. I'm glad I did. And you have a very long title. I'm going to take up most of the show by giving this. You ready? Here we go. Director of Behavioral and Implementation Science at the International Vaccine Access Center, based at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Okay, is your business card like the size of a 4x10 card? That is long.
We don't do business cards anymore, but you're right. I don't know how little that is.
Well,
it's pretty long.
Yeah. It's a lot. By the way, I forgot to, I'm Larry Jacobs. Did I mention that before? Call me Larry, Rupali, please.
Okay, thank you. Nice to meet you, Larry.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you here, okay, with us. And we love working with Johns Hopkins. You guys do such good work. I think people know that, but we got to talk about this vaccine thing. And just to get this started, there was a newly launched Coursera course on the web training individuals to become vaccine ambassadors. All right, and I have the link on the website, but it is Coursera.org. Okay, actually, just Google vaccine ambassadors Coursera, and it'll probably pop right up. Okay, and I have it right here on the website if you want to link over there. Rupali, tell us about your job. Again, I'm going to say Director of Behavioral and Implementation Science at the International Vaccine Access Center. I didn't even know there was such a place at the Bloomberg School of Public Health. Talk to me. Tell me what you do every day.
Yeah, so I am a behavioral scientist. I essentially study how individuals come up and decide to engage in a healthy behavior or not. And I have been studying vaccine hesitancy and vaccine acceptance for about 10 years now.
Wow. Well, you know, but most people, including me, don't realize it was enough to study 10 years ago, okay? This is nothing new. Everybody thinks this is new. Okay? Everybody. Let me change that. I thought this was new. I grew up in a time where we lined up at school. We all got shots, probably all from the same needle, okay, for polio vaccines and everything else. Okay? And, wow. Please speak about vaccine hesitancy 10 years ago. Really? Wow.
Yeah.
So, I'm amazed.
So about 10 years ago, you know, essentially the biggest reasons that people were concerned about vaccines had to do with childhood vaccines, right? So essentially hesitancy and acceptance researchers were really talking to parents because it had to do with parents essentially had four main concerns, right? So the first had to do with vaccine ingredients. The second had to do with the vaccine schedule, i.e. how many shots a kiddo gets at different times in their life. The third really had to do with risk perception. And to your point about polio, I think many parents would say, why does my child need a polio vaccine? I've never even seen polio, right?
Then finally, the
other concern is a misperception and misconception, I would say, that the vaccines cause adverse events, i.e. they're linked to autism, even though, again, this has been soundly refuted over and over again. That has shifted, and related to COVID, the issues have also shifted a little bit. And again, now this is not just childhood vaccines, this is also adult vaccines as well.
Right.
And the questions that we really get, I mean, the reasons why now people are a little bit concerned and might have questions related to getting a COVID vaccine really have to do now with sort of larger issues, I would say, like distrust in the government, for example,
yeah.
misinformation, right, that's being propagated and fueled on social media. And
yeah.
then also just there are still safety issues, right? There's still questions about this vaccine. People are concerned about side effects, et cetera. And so, yeah, so we've essentially been working to make sure that people have evidence to make a decision as to whether or not get a vaccine. Because our biggest concern is that people are making that decision based on misinformation.
Yeah, and my standing joke, if I may joke about this, is that there's a side effect to not getting the vaccine, which is called death. Okay, which is not good. Okay, that's not a good side effect. And I am fully vaccinated, fully boosted, as is everyone I know. All right, and I know for a fact that it has my friends of mine who have grandchildren. They just caught COVID from the grandchildren, but thankfully everybody's vaccinated, even the kids, okay, and they still passed it on to, and everybody's doing okay, although they passed test positive. And I don't want people to be sick from COVID, all right? And this one, I guess because of social media and because it's a pandemic, what's happening now, okay, is just getting out of control. And so my question, I have to ask this question, have we already vaccinated everybody who's going to get vaccinated? It seems to me we're fighting really an uphill battle these days, and I don't like that. I'm not happy about it. I can't stand it. It makes me people have to make their own choices, of course. But this is a public health battle, and have we vaccinated everybody that's going to actually get the vaccine?
It's a really good question. Yeah, no, it's a really good question, and what we have seen is that essentially about 62% of people over the age of 18 have gotten the full dose of the vaccine. And that number has stayed around that. I think 3 months ago, we were at 58%, right? So we haven't made a lot of progress. However, there are individuals, we are seeing this across the country, where there are some people that are coming in and getting the vaccine, but it's essentially more of a trickle now, right? So when we started, demand kind of outstripped supply, right? And then there was a big shift sort of in the summer. And we were still trying to get people vaccinated or to at least complete their primary series, right? But, I mean, that's still almost 40% of the population here in the United States that has not received a full series dose of the vaccine. And that's really concerning. That's almost half the population.
Why it is, and I'm asking this, I think I know the answer, but I want to hear it from you. Why is that so concerning? If 60% have the vaccine, this is a terrible question. Okay, do we have to spend time worrying about the 40% if we're protected? Okay, speaking from the vaccinated point of view, okay, and we'll eventually, what can we do about this? It's very frustrating to me. It drives me nuts, as a matter of fact. And it drives me nuts. I just have to say this. I just don't want people to get sick. I mean, I'm fairly safe, but I don't want other people to get sick. It's enough already, and they're driving the healthcare workers crazy. There's not enough healthcare workers. I mean, you can hear the frustration in my voice. It's so nuts.
And I think part of it is that there is an issue of we have been really, I think, straining the healthcare system. I talk to colleagues that are in clinical settings or in hospital, and I don't know how they're doing it. I really don't. They've got to be beyond past their breaking points of managing this. So there's that.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger question, with regards to why it's important for us, even though 60% of the population, is that COVID, especially currently, Omicron, which is the dominating variant, is highly infectious. So we need to have much more of the population not be susceptible. The one thing that a virus wants to do is that it wants to replicate. How does it do that? It has to find a susceptible host.
Yeah,
exactly.
And
so, if you have less susceptible hosts, i.e. if you have more people, more proportion of the population vaccinated, it will eventually die out. But because, again, 2/5 of our population is not, it will continue to circulate. We will continue to deal with it as individuals that are vaccinated or unvaccinated, right? But the difference here is that the outcomes are very different between those that are unvaccinated and vaccinated. And you're right. It's really hard to see people that you know and that you love that unfortunately have suffered and have gotten severe COVID, and have passed.
And I don't want them to die. anybody. I don't. It's ridiculous.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, it always reminds me, and I'm going to get into what people can do about this, but it always reminds me, I don't know if you ever read it, is H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. Did you ever read that, Rupali?
I did. It's been a long time, but yeah, I did read that.
But do you remember how it ends? It ends because the Martians, this is very simple, forgot to wear spacesuits when they came to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the Martians, yeah. We couldn't beat them. But they were killed off by the very smallest of creatures, if I may quote H.G. Wells, the viruses and the bacteria. That's what killed them. Okay? And all these people who say, I don't want a vaccine, they wouldn't go to Mars without a spacesuit. Okay, it's that simple, all right? And right now we're on Mars with this pandemic. You got to wear a spacesuit, and the spacesuit in this case, if I can just break it down to simple things, okay, just like the Martians didn't learn, they were that smart, but they weren't smart enough. They couldn't beat the littlest thing on Earth, okay? They could beat the big things, but not the littlest things. Does that help put this in perspective? I don't know, Rupali. Just the whole thing makes me crazy.
Well, I think that it is hard because a lot of people are thinking and relating sort of the vaccine to like a seatbelt, right? Like, would you not wear a seatbelt if you were on the highway, right? Like, I think there's a lot of things that we can relate this to. I think the bigger question and the bigger issue here is that, you know, there has been an increase in distrust towards the government and the healthcare system, right? There's a huge, 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 huge amount of misinformation.
Mm,
and these things
yeah.
are really driving why people do not want to get the vaccine. And I think from my perspective, as someone that has spoken to thousands of individuals that are concerned and aren't sure if they want to get the vaccine, I think that the biggest sort of takeaway I would say is that we have to approach these conversations with empathy. And it can be hard for a lot of people. You know, people will come up to me and have screamed in my face before, right,
about this,
like, I know that you put this in the vaccine. And the biggest thing here is how do we not dismiss individuals' concerns, right? Acknowledge that they have these concerns, but then help them make a decision that's based in evidence. And that has been really, really, really hard. And so that's really why we developed this course, because I'm a mom. I have two kids under the age of 12.
Yeah.
And the number of questions that I would get with regards to just the vaccine, the kids' vaccine, everything. And I just thought, you know, it's really important for parents to be able to have these conversations with other parents because that's sort of how it happens, right? That's how you decide lots of things.
Yeah.
Having these conversations at the bus stop, at the swimming pool, at soccer practice, whatever. And so that's why we actually wanted to develop a course like this where it was peer-to-peer communication instead of, you know, communication from a doctor to a patient, for example.
And I've got the link to the course up here on the description of our show if people want to do it, but it's at Coursera.org, and it's a little long to say over the radio here, but it's /learn/COVID-vaccine/ambassador, and that's what we want to do is make people vaccine ambassadors and make them able to talk to friends and family clearly, nicely, with respect, if I may, okay? About why they need to get the vaccine. But what are they going to learn if they who do you want to sign up for this course? And by the way, I have to mention this. I just read in the New York Times today that a lot of the states, especially here in the Northeast, are removing the mask mandate in schools for the kids, okay, which I think is probably a good thing. I don't know if you agree, to get back to some semblance of normalcy. All right, but that means we need people to be vaccinated, all right, to protect themselves, especially teachers, et cetera, and moms and dads, et cetera. I'm rambling again. Help me. What's the course about? How will this help schools? Sorry,
yes.
Rupali. It just
yes.
gets
no.
Yeah, makes me crazy.
It's okay. So the course was actually developed by a parent advisory group that helped us think about the content delivery and the format. It's free. It takes most people less than an hour, but we have on the course site that will take you less than 2 hours. It essentially goes through step by step, like here's the science first, right? Let's talk about the vaccines, how they're made, how your immune system works. Then it goes into why people might have concerns. And then it goes into really communication techniques, like how do you talk to people that might have concerns? And then the last section focuses on misinformation. How do you identify misinformation and how do you really mitigate misinformation? So it's interactive. We did a number of videos that were really great. We did a number of whiteboard animations to keep it really short and to the point. And I think we've had almost 6,000 people already take the course. It went up about a week and a half ago. So it's been pretty popular so far. Yeah, and people seem to really like it because it's concise, it's to the point, it's informative, but again, hopefully we wanted to make it as engaging as possible.
And who are the people who are who so far, if you, not obviously by name, but who are these people who have taken the course so far? Do you know?
Yeah.
Do you have a description of them?
It's been great.
Yeah.
We've gotten some really good feedback. So lots of parents have taken the course. A lot of teachers have taken the course. We've had people also contact us from health departments that have taken the course. So it's kind of it's everything over the sun. And again, the goal here is not, even though it says parent ambassador in the name, the goal is really for anyone to have a conversation with a colleague or a peer or a friend, right, or a family member, and just to equip them with the right knowledge and the right information and, again, the right communication techniques to have this conversation.
And have you heard any feedback? And I know it's new, from people who have taken the course and actually talked to people, and the reaction of those people who are hesitant.
Yes, several people have reached out to us, and several people have put this in the comments on Coursera, where you can kind of provide, like, your reaction and your story. And several parents have reached out to me to say, this is so helpful to have a conversation with my insert family member, right? This is so useful for me to think about how to approach this. And again, our goal here is we just want people to make this decision based on evidence. Are we going to get everyone that talks to someone after taking this course to get the vaccine? No. But I think if we can at least start that conversation, right, and we can start having empathetic conversations about this, and we move people towards accepting a vaccine, to me, that's really success, and that's a win in my book, because that's where we need to be going with this. It's not going to be an easy Band-Aid. It's going to be something that requires sort of sustained conversations, interpersonal conversations, but again, grounded in empathy here.
And you have to do that. I must ask you, what about a person's ethnic culture? And the reason I'm asking that is because there has been a lot of talk that I read, far from an expert in this, that African-American people are particularly hesitant about this. And my son's best friend is from Newark. He's a black guy and a great friend of mine, too. And when I talk to him about the vaccine, he just says, no way will I get it. I don't trust the government. Okay? No matter what I do, I should take the course. Okay, and it's an African American thing in this case, and I know I'm stereotyping when I say that, using Marlon as an example. Okay, but just talk to me about this. What is it?
Yeah,
what's going on with that?
So one thing that I will say is that we've seen that individuals that identify as African Americans are more likely to be hesitant and are less likely to get the vaccine. There's really two key reasons, in my opinion, for this. Right, the one is sort of a history of experimentation. I think abuse that unfortunately that African Americans have faced. And then the second is current racism and systematic discrimination that we see in terms of how African American patients are treated within the healthcare system. So to me, I completely understand and get why individuals of certain ethnic groups are sort of saying, you know what, I don't really want the vaccine. I don't trust the government. They haven't really treated me well in the past. They don't treat me well now. And so that's why I think it's even more important to have these peer-to-peer approaches where you are talking to individuals that you trust, that you believe in. They're not necessarily a medical or healthcare or public health professional. They're more friends of yours, right, that can help you navigate and think through the decision, again, in a manner that's evidence-based and that's really focused on empathy. And that's why it's really important to think about how do we rely on other peer approaches. So for example, we've been working really closely with pastors in the African Methodist Episcopal Church because they've reached out to say, how do I talk to my congregation?
Yeah.
Right? What are the ways in which I can talk to my congregation to encourage vaccination? And it's been a really great partnership and a way in which, again, we can leverage the peer-to-peer approach, but we can also leverage the fact that individuals put their trust in the pastor, right?
That's
are we going to listen to what the pastor has to say? And so, yeah, I think more of that is going to be, I think, critical for us as we continue to kind of deal with, as you were mentioning, sort of layering, peeling back these layered mitigation strategies. If masks get removed, well, that still means that we still need to be doing everything else that we can, right? Including vaccination, including ventilation, including anything else that we can do to mitigate that risk. And so that's why it's even more important, I think, to have these conversations and make sure that community leaders that aren't necessarily healthcare folks are equipped to talk to their peers and sort of the people they influence.
Where are we, okay, now on the pandemic? You know, they're removing the mask mandates, et cetera, okay? And this is the question. I know it's not scientifically, but it seems to be winding down, What scares me is another variant coming down the pike. But in this day and age right now, February 8th, 2022, mm-hmm. Rapali, where are we? I mean, that seems to be a thing now, okay, that, the pandemic's winding down. I really don't need it now. Things are getting better. We can live with this. Well, put that in perspective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think there, we are seeing certain governors, I think New Jersey governor just this week, right, decided that they're going to remove mask mandates in schools. So I'm a proponent of a layered mitigation approach. Masks are part of that solution. We do know that masks can help reduce risk. I'm not saying that they are perfect, right? But I'm saying if you layer that type of an approach on top of ventilation, on top of social distancing, right, on top of all of these things, that helps mitigate risk. What we are seeing from a prevalence perspective is that we're starting to see cases plateau through this wave. Hopefully this means over the next month or so that we'll really start to quickly see cases drop down with regards to community transmission. And fingers crossed, you know, mm-hmm. over the next several months, we'll have a little bit of a lull, right? I can't predict the next variant, as you know, right? And a lot of this has to do with vaccine equity.
You can.
I think that luckily, because we're coming towards the summer months, it also allows for there's a decrease in respiratory viruses circulating, but also we do a lot more stuff outside, right?
Yeah.
So it becomes a little bit easier to do things safer. So I'm hoping, I don't know if you remember last summer. Last summer was glorious. I feel like it was...
Yep.
People almost felt like things were, you know, we were really doing well with regards to transmission. A lot of people had been quickly vaccinated by June. People got to go on vacation, you know, and so I'm hoping that there'll be sort of a similar kind of summer. I think the key is going to be when a new variant might pop up and what does next fall look like as the months get cold again and we start to see an increase in respiratory viruses. And again, we know more people are congregating indoors, meaning there's more infectious, there's more transmission going on.
But it's still important to get vaccinated now. I want to make that point, right?
Yes.
Still important.
Yes, absolutely.
Still important. Put schools now into all this, okay? We're talking to a lot of educators on this show. We're talking to mostly educators on this show, all educators on this show. Put the schools into perspective with all this.
I think that the one thing that I would argue, and I have, again, I'm a mom. I have two children under the age of 12. And so they both are in elementary school, and it has been really harrowing, I think, for a lot of parents. I think teachers are, and, you know, school administration and staff are just trying to do the right thing. And my heart goes out to them because I know they've been trying to juggle a lot. And again, I'm amazed at how they've been able to be flexible. I think the biggest thing here is how do we balance the risks, right, with regards to COVID? And how do we make sure that kids are still, you know, being really fulfilled from emotional, from social, from an academic perspective, from a cognitive, from all of it? And I think the key here, it has to be twofold. It's not should we open schools, it's can we open schools safely? And the problem is that we can open schools and, let's say, get rid of masks and get rid of all these other measures. But essentially what you're doing then is that you are essentially decreasing, I think, protections to make sure that kiddos are protected. Now, while I would argue that, again, for most children, you know, the virus is mild, but that is not the case for all children. We've seen a record rise in the increase of pediatric hospitalizations over the last several months. And, you know, for me, we need to really think about the whole point of public health is to protect the health of the public. And so there are going to be measures, I think, that schools, whatever that they can employ, should employ to make sure that they have this layered strategy. Again, balancing that with the idea of what do we need to be doing so that kiddos, again, are whole, right? That they're able to be engaged, they're able to have social interaction, that they're able to have emotional support, et cetera. And so I think, you know, for schools, what I would argue is that continue to work with, and I know many schools have been working so closely hand in hand with public health and county agencies, right? But continue to follow the science. My biggest concern with all of this is that this issue has been so politicized and that at the political and state level, right, we're starting to see things come in place that aren't necessarily driven by science. And again, schools are in a really hard place, right? They rely on the government for different, you know, resources, funding, et cetera.
Of course.
Right. And so I feel like it's got to be a partnership, though, right? It's continuing to work with public health agencies and individuals that study this while also making sure that you are thinking about the development of the children, right, that you're really tasked to help, you know, learn and grow.
Yeah, and I think I think it's got to be so frustrating for kids who really don't have the understanding of the entire social complex of this, because the complexity of this, okay? And that masks, no masks, shields in the school, the teacher's mask, all that sort of stuff. It's a very, very difficult time for kids, and we just have to make sure that, you know, it's better. We do a lot of work here with social-emotional stuff, and all of this pandemic has a lot to do, okay, with social-emotional needs. It's really put an emphasis on that in schools. It's been a very, very, very tough time, okay? Do you teach the course? Are you the person who's doing the course? Like,
I'm the lead instructor, and then it was pulled together by another colleague of mine named Alex Michael, and actually a master student named Gretchen Schultz were really the masterminds behind this. But it was, we were really excited to bring something to the table. It was a very rapid, time frame for us to pull this together, but we just really saw that there was a need, so we wanted to make sure folks had something that they could, that they could rely on.
That's great. And you said earlier, I'm going to say you're a director of behavioral and implementation science. You're a behavioral scientist. If I may ask, is that a sociological degree or a psychological degree? Where's that degree sit
in
there?
No, it's a great question.
I'm just curious.
Yes. No, it's a great question. It's actually a combination of a number of things, where it's sociology, it's psychology, but it's also very, very public health focused. So it's a combination of all of those things, and usually those of us that have this type of degree are really looking at why do people make the decisions that they do, and how can we really facilitate them to engage them in behaviors that have them make healthier decisions.
And if you go to Mars, will you wear a spacesuit? Because you've got to learn from the Martians who came here. Okay,
I would definitely wear a spacesuit.
It's so stupid. I always love that in the movies. None of the monsters ever wear a spacesuit. They all come here without spacesuits. Okay, and I'm serious. You break it down like that. Okay, that's what this is about. Okay, and everybody going to read War of the Worlds. That little virus. What are the 20 million of them on the tip of a pencil or something like that? That little virus, okay, can do a lot of damage, and it has done a lot of damage. All right, and we just got to protect ourselves. And we have this miracle called the vaccine. God only knows how they came up with that so quick. They did it, and they saved millions of lives, as far as I'm concerned. We got to do more on this. So it's, I'm going to read it again, Coursera, C-O-U-R-S-E-R-A, Coursera.org/learn/COVID-vaccine-ambassador. You can become a vaccine ambassador, okay? And you can see Rupali up on screen, right, Rupali?
Yes, you'll see me in some of the videos as well.
Okay, it's been great to have you here. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. This is great.
Yes, thank you so much. It was great to chat with you.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to have you here, and continue. Keep going with the good work. It's important, okay? It really, really is, all right? And tell everybody to read the graphic. Make a graphic novel, War of the Worlds. I'm telling you, that'll get the point across, okay? Hey, thank you. You take care.
Thank you so much. Yes,
oh,
have a great
welcome.
Rest of the day. Thank you.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Rupali LeMay from Johns Hopkins. Okay, let me go over her title again. Director of Behavioral and Implementation Science at the International Vaccine Access Center, based at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. The world's longest business card, if she had one. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org and also at seltoday.org. See what we're doing. Check it all out. And this is great. It's always great to have Johns Hopkins with us. Everybody, thanks for listening, and please stay safe.